Hello and welcome to the Veterinary Secrets Podcast. My name is Dr. Andrew Jones and this is episode 11. In today's episode, I'm going to tell you what you need to know about the dog flu outbreak and whether or not you need to worry. How to treat your dog or cat's dandruff at home with 5 new remedies. And then discuss the FDA warning about the topical anti-inflammatory drug, which has caused death and illness in some pets. Now Veterinary Secrets is on iTunes. Go to iTunes and search for Veterinary Secrets. We're on Stitcher. You can download the Stitcher app and search for Veterinary Secrets, or go to stitcher.com/podcast/veterinary-secrets. I would definitely appreciate it if you'd subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. You can do so on iTunes or Stitcher. Any questions or comments, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinarysecrets.com/blog, or you can send me an email, and that's at podcast@veterinarysecrets.com. Now let's get right into today's podcast. The dog flu outbreak, which hit Chicago and it sickened more than 1,000 dogs. As you may or may not have heard, there's currently a dog flu outbreak in Chicago. In an advisory issued by the Cook County Department of Animal and Rabies Control, officials said that more than 1,000 cases have been identified over the past month, and 5 dogs have died from the disease. The Chicago Park District began posting warnings at dog parks last week, advising dog owners to keep their pets away from any place where there is close contact with other dogs, a spokeswoman for the organization said. Over the weekend, the group canceled their annual Doggy Easter Egg Hunt held at a local dog park to prevent the spread of the illness. So what are the signs of this infection in dogs? Dog flu symptoms are a lot like human symptoms, and they include fever, cough, nasal discharge, and lack of energy. And just like the human flu, it can be caught from sneezes and coughs, nose-to-nose contact, or from infected surfaces. Symptoms last for about 2 weeks until the virus runs its course. How serious is this infection in dogs? The percentage of dogs' infections with this disease and that die is incredibly small. Some dogs have infections with no signs, while a small percent have severe infections. Unfortunately, that's less than 5%. Severe illness is characterized by the onset of pneumonia. Although this is a relatively new disease in dogs, and nearly all dogs are susceptible to infection, about 80% of dogs, if they are infected, will just have the mild form of the disease. So how does the dog flu spread? Canine influenza virus, much like our virus, can spread to other dogs by direct contact with aerosolized respiratory secretions from infected dogs, by uninfected dogs coming in contact with contaminated objects, which is less common, and then by moving contaminated objects or materials between infected and uninfected dogs. Therefore, dog owners whose dogs are coughing or showing other signs of respiratory disease should not expose other dogs to the virus. Clothing, equipment, surfaces, and hands should be cleaned and disinfected after exposure to dogs showing signs of respiratory disease. So what is the dog flu, otherwise known as canine influenza? Well, according to the CDC, dog flu is a contagious respiratory disease in dogs caused by a specific type A influenza virus, referred to as the canine influenza virus. This is a disease of dogs, not of people. The canine influenza virus is an influenza A H3N8 influenza virus, not a human influenza virus, that was originally an equine or horse influenza virus. This virus has spread to dogs and can now spread from dog to dog. In 2004, however, cases of an unknown respiratory illness in dogs, initially it started in greyhounds, were reported. An investigation showed that this respiratory illness was caused by the equine influenza virus, an H3N8 virus. Scientists believe that this virus jumped species from horses to dogs and has now adapted to cause illness in dogs and spread among dogs housed in kennels and shelters. So what is the risk to humans from this virus to date? There's no evidence of transmission of the canine influenza virus from dogs to people, and there has not been a single reported cause of human infection with the canine influenza virus. While this virus infects dogs and spreads between dogs, there is no evidence that this virus infects people. So what about the vaccine? Well, the vaccine is produced by Novavax, its canine flu H3N8 vaccine, the first licensed vaccine to protect against canine influenza. The features and benefits, according to the vaccine manufacturer Merck, claim that it's proven to significantly reduce the clinical signs, severity, and spread of canine influenza infection. They claim that it reduced the incidence and severity of coughing, decreased the overall clinical signs of disease, including ocular and nasal discharge, coughing, sneezing, depression, and dyspnea, reduced the days and amount of viral shedding, demonstrated protection against the formation and severity of lung lesions, and it contains killed type A subtype H3N8 virus combined with an adjuvant to enhance the immune response. If it's to be given to your dog, the doses is by under the skin or subcutaneously, and it's 2 1 cc doses given 2 to 4 weeks apart. Annual revaccination with 1 dose is recommended. The warnings, according to Merck, is that it contains gentamicin, amphotericin B. Those are antibiotics as preservatives. Your dog can potentially react to those. Never vaccinate pregnant bitches. The use of a biological product may produce anaphylaxis and or other anti-inflammatory immune-mediated hypersensitivity reactions. So these are serious acute allergic reactions. The antidote in that case is epinephrine, steroids, antihistamines, depending on the nature and severity of the reaction. So what should you do as a concerned dog owner? I mean, do you need to worry about the dog flu? So first of all, I want to give you some perspective and put some common sense here. Currently, there are 70 million dogs in the US and Canada, and we were looking at 1,000 cases. That puts the odds of your dog getting the disease at 0.00143%. That's about 1 in 100,000 dogs. And by perspective, what are the odds that you personally will be injured by a toilet this year? It's 1 in 10,000. Clearly, very minuscule odds. 2, if you don't live in Chicago, I really think you shouldn't even consider the vaccine. 3, most dogs, 80%, have very mild symptoms, and many have no signs at all. This is a new disease, a new vaccine with very little information reported about side effects in spite of over 1 million doses. Clearly, there are adverse effects, as there are with all vaccines, more than the quote-unquote anaphylaxis and other anti-inflammatory immune-mediated hypersensitivity reactions that the company states. I personally won't be vaccinating my dogs, nor would I be advising this if I were still in practice. Similar to the flu in people, realize that most dogs have only mild signs, if they were to ever get it and recover with simple supportive care. I mean, it really, really is a mild disease. Your dog isn't going to get over with it. 7, do what you can to keep your dog's immune system strong. Feed your dog a good quality diet, looking at good nutrition, quality holistic food, using home recipes, occasionally feeding raw, supplementing to aid in your dog's immune function. Look at adding in essential fatty acids, such as in the form of flax oil, additional probiotics to boost your dog's intestinal immune system, looking at something like colostrum, a key immune supportive supplement, antioxidant vitamins and minerals. All of these are in my supplement, Ultimate Canine Health Formula, available at drjonesnaturalpet.com/supplement. The big conclusion they want to leave you with is, one, putting it in perspective. And I think as we're sitting right now within society, we're very drawn to drama and crisis, and that's what makes the news. So that's what you're hearing about. But if you're able to sit back and put this into big, big perspective, yes, this is a new disease. Yes, it's getting lots and lots of media coverage. But do I think your dog is at risk? No. If you happen to live in Chicago and you're in an area, you can talk to your local veterinarian. Discuss, I mean, how many cases of flu are happening right now? Perhaps you're in an area where there's a number of dogs, a large population of dog owners, and they're seeing like huge incidence of that disease. Okay, in that case, then you could consider that vaccine, but consider it with caution and talk about potential chance of side effects. I mean, I would just be very cautious about it. Myself personally, you know, I would strongly advise it against vaccination. For most people listening to this podcast, I would never get my dogs this vaccine, you know, unless there was a huge serious outbreak. But even then, I would really caution against it unless you've got a dog that has potentially another compromised immune system or is a little bit older, increased odds of that dog developing pneumonia. As reported earlier, very few dogs get serious diseases, so they're not leading to pneumonia. So ultimately, I guess, leaving with that point, putting in perspective, just being very cautious, do your research, talk to your local veterinarian. And I think for the most part, the biggest thing is to just, you know, sort of use your common sense and don't vaccinate. Now let's get into the second part of today's podcast, dandruff in dogs and cats. It can be beaten. If your dog or cat has dandruff, you're going to likely want to know what you can do about it. In this part of the podcast, you're going to learn about what causes dandruff in your pet. Funny thing, it's often much the same as people. More importantly, then you're going to find out what exactly you can do at home to stop dandruff. Small amounts of dandruff are normal, but when you start to see these big mountains of white, dead, flaky skin on your pet's coat, you need to do something about it. Skin cells are continuously formed, so the shedding of these old cells is completely normal. Then when you're seeing excess amount of it. The dead skin cells are shedding at a faster rate than normal. Something's going on. The normal oil in your pet's coat causes the dead skin to clump together and show up as these white flakes. So that's what you're seeing dandruff. You got normal oil on your pet's skin. You got skin cells that are dying faster than normal. They clump up. That's what you see. So you have these old skin cells, as I said, rapidly dying, often due to another underlying disease. The most common cause of dandruff in dogs and cats is an underlying allergy, such as atopy, inhalant allergy, or surface allergy, or food allergy. Other potential causes include nutritional deficiency, metabolic disease, such as low thyroid function. So what are your options? First, let's look at these oatmeal-based shampoos, such as Aveeno. They're effective in decreasing itchiness and removing the flakes. Another option is a pet dandruff shampoo that contains salicylic acid. Lather it on very well, and you need to leave it on for a full 10 minutes, and that's a big key point. So take your pet into the bath, bring in your watch, you lather them up well, but just wait a full 10 minutes. Key thing, you don't just put it on. It seems like it's long enough. You've got to time yourself. 10 minutes can seem like a long time when you've got an unhappy dog in the bathtub. It makes a huge difference. Then after it's been on for that 10 minutes, rinse it off well, and this can be done weekly if needed. Moisturizing of the skin is essential. Following a shampoo, help keep the skin supple by adding a conditioner. There are specific pet conditioning shampoos, or you can use a lotion designed for moisturizing our own skin as far as people's skin. Treat the secondary infections. Commonly, dogs that have dandruff have secondary skin infections from bacteria and yeast. Rinsing their coats with undiluted vinegar will kill a number of organisms. Vinegar is especially effective in killing yeast, and I've used a 50-50 mixture of apple cider vinegar and water to treat dandruff and yeast. Consider changing your pet's diet. Diet plays a huge role in overall skin health. Put your pet on a high-quality premium food. You'll probably see an immediate decrease in dandruff. Some pets respond better to more natural-type foods, such as Innova, California Natural. Give the new food a 4-week trial period to see if it works. 4 to 6 weeks is pretty minimum. Fatty acids are essential for dogs. Flax oil is inexpensive, ideal. You can look at doing a dose of 1 tablespoon per 40 pounds of dog weight daily. For cats, fish oil clearly seems to be a better option. Either way, you need to be looking at therapeutic doses. You're looking at 1,000 milligrams of this essential fatty acid per 10 pounds of body weight daily. So in summary, dandruff, as irritating as it is a normal body process. But if it's in excess, there's something else underlying going on. You need to be looking at underlying causes and consider treating them. Start with some of the correct shampoos, look at treating some of the secondary problems such as allergies, and then look at adding in the essential fatty acid. You go through all these steps, in most cases you're going to deal with the dandruff. If you don't and you've still got this ongoing dandruff concern, then by all means see your veterinarian, discuss potential blood tests. They may need to be looking at some of these underlying metabolic diseases, you know, such as thyroid disease, such as diabetes. But as I said, in most cases, by following these simple steps, you're going to help deal with the dandruff. Now let's get into the last part of today's podcast, and this is about a very recent article where the FDA has just been warning pet owners and veterinarians of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug toxicity from the use of a drug called topical chlorpromazine. So it's related to ibuprofen. 3 cats have died, others have been sickened after owners have applied a cream or lotion containing this new anti-inflammatory drug. The FDA has issued a warning that even very small amounts of this topical pain medication containing the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, chlorpromazine, can cause illness and death in pets. The agency is encouraging veterinarians who have patients who show signs of NSAID toxicity to ask their clients if anyone in the household has used topical medications containing this drug, chlorpromazine. The FDA says it has received reports of cats in 2 households that became ill or died after their owners used topical medications containing the drug. The pet owners had applied the cream or lotion to the neck of their cat or feet, and not directly to their pet, and it's not known exactly how the cats became exposed to the medication. Likely the cats licked. In 1 household, 2 cats developed kidney failure and recovered with veterinary care, according to the FDA. 2 cats in a 2nd household developed signs that include reluctance to eat, lethargy, vomiting, melena, which is bloody stool, anemia, they've lost a lot of blood, their gums are pale, and dilute urine. Both died despite care. The FDA said that a 3rd cat in the household also died after the owner stopped using the medication. Necropsies on all 3 cats found evidence of NSAID toxicity. Veterinarians should encourage clients clients to take precautions with fluorbifrinone medications, the FDA said. It recommends that pet owners do the following to prevent or reduce pet exposure. Store all medications safely out of the reach of pets. Safely discard or clean any cloth or applicator that may retain medication. And avoid leaving any residues of the medication on clothing, carpeting, or furniture. And consult your veterinarian on whether or not it's appropriate to cover the treated area. If you're using topical medications containing fluorbifrinone and your pet becomes exposed, bathe or clean your pet as thoroughly as possible and consult a veterinarian. If your pet shows signs such as lethargy, lack of appetite, vomiting, or other illness, seek veterinary care for your pet and be sure to provide the details of the exposure. The FDA has not received reports of dogs or other pets becoming sick in relation to the use of topical pain medications containing fluorbifrinone. However, these animals may also be vulnerable to NSAID toxicity after being exposed to the medication. Pet owners and veterinarians can report any adverse effects to the FDA at the FDA website, fda.gov. We've come to the end of today's podcast. Thank you for listening. I hope you got some good information out of today's podcast. One, I wanted to just allay some general fears around the dog flu. I'm getting multiple questions about the dog flu. What should I do? My veterinarian is saying I should vaccinate my dog. And there's been over 1 million doses of this vaccine given, yet we're looking at 1,000 cases diagnosed. So I hope that's helped. You have to give us sort of a sense of perspective. And I think my big point is you really need to be aware of what is the incidence of disease in that area. Has there been a single reported case of dog flu? Is that, if that's not the case, then don't worry. And even if there has been a reported case of dog flu, what are the odds of your dog getting that disease? And secondary, I mean, how serious is the disease? Relatively mild for the majority of dogs. So I hope that really helps you sort of allay your fears. If you've got a dog or cat that has dandruff, I encourage you to just re-listen to that section of the podcast, use some of those tips. And I think the two big things I want to reiterate from that podcast, make sure you're using therapeutic doses of the essential fatty acids, that if you are bathing your dog or your cat, that you're leaving that shampoo on for full 10 minutes. And three, then look at treating some of the topical things. So if we're dealing with something like yeast, 50-50 vinegar solution work really well. Lastly, with the story that we talked about, topical non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, the problems with NSAIDs in general and how susceptible, especially our cats are, just be very cautious with them. First, obviously, never give them to your cat in particular. Never give a human one to a dog or cat, period. And three, you know, if you can look at alternatives, do so. Once again, thanks for listening. If you have any questions, feel free to post a comment on my blog at veterinaryseekers.com/blog or send me an email and let's have podcast at veterinaryseekers.com. Once again, this is Dr. Andrew Jones, and I'll talk to you again next week.